Today's big story is brought to you by RBC's My Advisor, an online service offered at no additional cost that can help you get your finances in shape and plan for the future. And we will have a little story for you later about how Canadians are trying to do that. Happy Valentine's Day. And if you don't have a Valentine, don't worry. There is, as they say, an app for that. You've probably heard of this app. It's called YouTube.
Baby, wake up. It's 10:30.
That was a fellow named B.F. Barnfield. The B.F. stands for boyfriend. He is a lot of people's boyfriends, and he could be yours, too, anytime you need him. And if you don't like him, there are more.
Well, hello, sleepyhead. Yes, you fell asleep.
Hey, baby.
Well, you call you.
Bit of a rough day. Sweetie.
Dozens more, hundreds more. All of them online, all free, all on demand. Ready to give you not that rush of new love, but that boring, everyday comfort of modern romance. And nothing more than that. And it turns out, a lot of people really want that. And it's not that easy to find offline. So while every company out there spends today selling you the biggest, most romantic and grandiose Valentine's love story, just know that maybe that's not, actually, what we miss most in the digital age. Maybe all we really want is someone to bug us to empty the dishwasher or listen to us vent about work. And it turns out, that's the kind of thing the internet is well equipped to do. I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. This is The Big Story. Michael Harris is a Governor General Award-winning author. He's also an essayist who wrote about the nature of modern romance in The Walrus. Hi, Michael.
Hi, how you doing?
I'm doing really well. Why don't we start with kind of the central character that frames your piece? Tell me, who is B.F. Barnfield?
B.F. Barnfield is one of a whole group of people online who are producing these role play videos. So there's essentially an online subculture of these role play videos where someone's going to pretend to be your boyfriend or your girlfriend. And what you're actually watching in these videos, it might be an actor telling you how good you look today, or it might be somebody saying that, you know, they really like that outfit, you're going to kill it in the job interview. You know, he's one of really hundreds of people who are creating these kinds of videos.
What is it like to sit there or lie there and have such a one-sided conversation with somebody that's trying to take on that role?
Well, I don't know if you're familiar with the phenomenon of ASMR, but it's essentially a branch of that, right? You move into a kind of passive experience of being groomed, right? It's as calming as somebody combing your hair or giving your beard a trim or something. Like, you feel handled by this person because you don't have to bring anything to the table, right? But it's a kind of interaction, but it's entirely passive.
ASMR is a little bit more physical, or I guess maybe visual or whatever, but what you're describing in these videos is something much more intimate, I guess.
It is, yeah. I mean, the point of these role play videos, it's ultimately to get an infusion of artificial intimacy into your life, right? And I should note, like, it can be good attention or bad attention. It doesn't really matter. The point is just to feel a sense of closeness to somebody in a world that, you know, is often very lonely. So some of these role play videos, your boyfriend is actually really angry at you. Like, there's one where it's like a 10-minute monologue where the guy's complaining that you've been texting with your ex and he's not going to take it anymore, you know? And as we know, negative attention can be just as gratifying as positive attention because it means that you're important to that other person. So really what it comes down to is that these videos are romance on demand or intimacy on demand. You get to inject that into your life whenever you feel like you could use 20 minutes of being the center of somebody's world.
And you fell asleep to at least one of them, despite having a partner.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, so my first experience discovering this whole kind of subculture, I was in a bed in a hotel in London. So I was, you know, on the other side of the world from my husband. And I generally have like panic attacks when I fly. So I was exhausted, but I also had to be at a conference the next day and deliver a lecture. So I was just kind of desperate to try and get some sleep. But I was so wired up. So I did something that I really hadn't done before, which is I just typed help me sleep into the search bar on YouTube, thinking, you know, maybe something would show up. And what I found was this role play video, one of these boyfriend role play videos, where it was essentially a recording of a guy who's pretending to be your boyfriend and hushing you to sleep. So like I said before, you know, there's 100 different scenarios that play out. Sometimes, you know, they're driving you to work, or sometimes they're angry at you. But in this case, it was somebody who was doing you that kind of boyfriend service of calming you down and putting you to bed, essentially, with a really dreamy voice. And it was, you know, it was a super weird experience. It was kind of creepy, but also weirdly attractive. You know, it's kind of like candy for your heart. This really easy way to feel like you're being cared for. And then, yeah, at the same time, you kind of feel like you're cheating on your husband because you do have this quasi-intimate experience.
Did you confess right afterwards?
Not right afterwards. I think I told him about it when I got home. Yeah. And I wasn't even sure. I mean, he was not concerned about it.
Yeah.
He didn't think I was going to track down B.F. Barnfield and marry him. But it was a little weird to confess, I guess. Yeah.
Well, tell me about it. You've mentioned a couple times just how much of this is out there. How big is this industry? And I really like, you called it auto romance in your piece.
Yeah. I mean, ASMR in general has become so huge. I think most listeners will probably know what that is, that kind of brain tingly sensation that you get from feeling like somebody is grooming you or taking care of you. And so that larger version of this video culture is almost mainstream now. And then the subculture of the boyfriend and girlfriend role play videos is probably less known. I don't have actual numbers as to how many views there are, because YouTube doesn't necessarily help you collate those things. But I can tell you that some of the boyfriend and girlfriend roleplay videos do have hundreds of thousands of views. The performer that I became sort of interested in that night, B.F. Barnfield, he has hundreds of fans who they'll like text him every day how he was doing that day. So he has a whole bunch of relationships that have come to life out of these, as you say, one-sided videos.
Where does this demand come from? Is it something that didn't exist until technology made it possible for it to exist? Or is it something that we're now trying to generate because of something we're missing?
Yeah, you know, I think like so many of the ways that we interact with our technologies, the demand, the drive is there to begin with in a super libidinal kind of way. And then the device comes along, or the platform comes along, that knows how to capitalize on that primal drive, right? So when I was working on this essay, I spoke with Helen Fisher, who's a researcher at the Kinsey Institute, or a researcher at the Kinsey Institute, and she described for me how, you know, this need for romantic love, it's as primal as our need for shelter and for food, right? It's that deep in your brain, the need to feel like you are intimately important to somebody else. And, you know, all those deep things, what I found in, like, over the years writing about online life, is they're very easy to trigger and to manipulate because they're so basic to our sense of self-worth or our sense of health. So, you know, you look at how the fast food industry has manipulated our drive for salt or for sugar or for fat. And now we have these videos that can manipulate our drive to be loved or to feel close to somebody.
Is that drive lacking these days? Or maybe, I guess, is the experience lacking? Do we have any idea how or if we are lonelier than before?
I mean, quantifying these things is always difficult.
Yeah.
But I can tell you that pediatric associations and certainly government ministries in England and Canada and the States, they have declared, you know, loneliness epidemics. There really has been a much larger interest in loneliness as a systemic problem in our culture. And I don't mind these videos for that reason, because they can maybe staunch that pain. But I would say that there's always the worry of people getting manipulated because of their needs, right? It's a little bit like when a thirsty person starts drinking salt water because they feel like they have to drink something, but the easiest thing to get might not be the thing that actually satiates your thirst, right? In that way, you could end up with senior citizens who are desperately looking for some feeling of closeness to other humans, right? That's where most of the loneliness is, in senior citizens. And if they find these videos and they're looking for somebody to comfort them, they could get trapped. We know how naive senior citizens can be when it comes to getting their news online. So I can imagine a future in which senior citizens are very naive in where they get their intimacy as well.
This podcast will be right back after a really quick message. Can you guess the average dollar amount Canadian households have in savings? According to the most recent data, it is just $852. Now, the recommended rate of savings in Canada is 10%, and traditionally, Canada's historical rate has been around 7.5%. Last year, though, it was 1.7%. That doesn't sound like a lot, because it isn't. It can be hard to save today. For people who are often carrying debt, it can be even harder. In fact, 39% of Canadians right now of all ages don't think they will ever save enough for retirement. So how do you save when there's not much there to start with? Well, you need a plan, and we'll be back after this episode to tell you how RBC's My Advisor can help you get started, even if you only have a little. You can visit rbc.com/myadvisor to find out more right now, or enjoy the rest of this podcast, and we'll be there at the end to tell you more. One of the things that really fascinated me about this type of content, both the ones you described and just a little bit that I looked around myself, is that it's not so much a hunger for like the star-crossed romance that we all, you know, remember from our teens and falling in love. It's the like boring day-to-day style living together romance that these things seem to mostly be emulating.
Totally. I think we knew that the internet had delivered a lot of auto-erotic opportunities, right? The opportunity by watching porn. What we're discovering now is that in addition to the auto-erotic, there is the auto-romantic. We've now arrived at the point where there's one more human need that we don't necessarily need to get in the old-fashioned way, that on some level we can satiate just by clicking a button.
Do we even get it at all in the old-fashioned way anymore? Because, I mean, one of the things you talked about, and I'm also born in 1980, and I also can't fathom what young romance would be like to experience now. Like, I mean, objectively, I kind of know how it would happen, but I don't know how it would feel, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting thing to ponder. I mean, you probably need to speak to somebody younger than myself to get your answers. But I can tell you that statistically, people who are younger than you and I, they have less sex. They have less physical intimacy, although they are definitely more likely to be having erotic experiences through screens, right? So if you look at like the statistics for sending a sext, people who are like millennial age and younger are much more likely to be comfortable with that. And yet they might be less comfortable with physical intimacy in real life. Or I don't like using that term real life, actually. I feel like online life has become real life at this point. But yeah, certainly there is this question of what happens when you're spending more hours looking at a screen than you are looking into another human's eyes. And I mean, we passed that borderline a long time ago.
Do you think that our habits changing so quickly, especially in this regard, does anything to our psyches? I mean, romance is like the product of evolution, and it probably wasn't meant to so radically change over the course of like, you know, a decade or two.
I mean, I think you have to remember that all of these things are just gears somewhere in our head that are being pulled, right? Ultimately, I mean, the idea of romance, the idea of being romantically connected to another human, is itself a very pragmatic thing. And not every kind of creature on the planet has anything like an idea of a need for romance. One argument that I kind of have held on to or enjoyed was that romance was basically a Darwinian cure for the fact that men kept on killing their children. And feeling romantically connected to the family unit was a way to protect children, create a kin relationship or a need to protect your closest clan members, you know? So all that to say, has it changed? I think those basics are, you know, they're there from pre-civilization times. I don't think they're going anywhere, but I think we do need to think about the ways that we satiate those needs as a diet. So if I find, to go back to the fast food metaphor, if I find that I can satiate my need for sugar and fat by going to McDonald's, that doesn't mean I'm going to go to McDonald's every day because I know that it's going to make me obese. Similarly, if I find there are easy ways to satiate my need for romance, I might become socially obese if I am going for that easy, quick fix on YouTube. What socially obese means ultimately is that you might never, or you might have a harder time achieving those deeper levels of intimacy that, of course, a YouTube screen is never going to deliver.
Well, let's talk quickly about the other side of that screen, because I know you said, you know, your husband wasn't worried that you would track down VF Barnfield, but you did end up talking to him on the phone.
I did. Yeah.
And
yeah.
I guess, first of all, what was that like? And second of all, does he think about the larger picture and the kind of things that we just discussed about the role he's filling for people?
I don't think he thinks of it in the terms that you and I are talking about it. I think he thinks of it as a kind of therapy that he's providing. But he also thinks of it as a therapy for himself. That was the thing that really amazed me the most. Is that, you know, after tracking this guy down, it turns out he lives in Brazil. He was actually just as lonely as all those hundreds of people that were coming to enjoy his videos. So, you know, at first I thought he was making all these videos because he was like a kind of angel figure who was providing a service for people. He wanted to help all these lonely masses. But it turned out it was just as important to him that these videos were making him feel less lonely. That he was using the internet to find hundreds of boyfriends and girlfriends, you know, that were sending him new messages. It was he had become a kind of romantic pop star, that and he was sort of trying to fill that hole of loneliness that everybody has. I sometimes wonder, you know, if loneliness is actually a deeply important part of building in a rich interior life, because it forces you to confront yourself and come to terms with who you really are. And when we're denied loneliness, when we don't have loneliness as part of our daily experience, we can't build that rich interior life, right? Because if we're able to fill up the loneliness, we will always do that. We'll always grab at that kind of easy intimacy. So it's only when we have the lucky experience of being denied intimacy that we get to build or look at who we truly are and live with ourselves in a more deep way.
Where do you think this goes next? And I don't necessarily mean BF or people like him, but you've kind of mentioned a couple of times how easy it can be to stimulate that feeling in us. And if we go further towards AI and computer programs, will this line get blurred further? I meant to ask you if you'd seen the movie Her, which talks about a lot of this.
Yeah, of course. Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of dystopian writers and just culture critics are pointing in the direction of that movie Her. It would not surprise me if 20 years from now we had moved further down that line. It also wouldn't surprise me if we turn out to be the most internet naive generation in history, right? We're the only generation that lived with and without the internet.
Mm-hmm.
We're kind of experiencing it like a kid in a candy shop. And I do sometimes wonder if those dystopian dreams are a little bit too pessimistic, because what people tend to do is they run head on into something. They figure out that it's actually not great for your health, for your mental health, or for your physical health for that matter. And then they start to develop a culture that manages it, right? That's the great thing about being somebody with a human brain, is that we have those libidinal instincts that are setting us on courses all the time automatically, but then we also have culture at large, and we have learned culture, and we're able to fight against those instincts. So for example, you know, the libidinal drive to have sex all the time should mean that an average person would have 30 or 40 children, but we don't, because we also have culture. We're also able to shape our lives in a conscious way. So I'm imagining that down the road, we may be able to shape our online lives in a healthier way, that we may be able to create healthier media diets, essentially.
Well, that's a lovely and hopeful place to end on. So thank you very much.
Thank you.
That was Michael Harris, an author and essayist. That was The Big Story. If you would like more, you can head to thebigstorypodcast.ca. You won't find many like that one, but there's lots of others. You can also talk to us on Twitter at TheBigStoryFPN, and you can find us everywhere you get your podcasts, on Apple, on Google, on Stitcher, on Spotify, wherever you prefer. Claire Brassard is the lead producer of The Big Story. Ryan Clark and Stephanie Phillips are our associate producers. Annalisa Nielsen is our digital editor. And I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings. Thanks for listening. Have a great long weekend, if you get one, and we'll talk Tuesday. Thanks for hanging around. Remember that low, low savings rate and the low average dollar amount? Those are the kind of stats that can discourage people from saving before they even start. I mean, how can you plan your retirement when your current savings can barely cover a one-way plane ticket? I have been there. It seems hopeless. And this is where RBC's My Advisor comes in. RBC's My Advisor helps you see all your finances in one place, even your accounts with other banks, so you understand where you currently stand financially in relation to your real goals. It also shows you your options in getting to those goals so you can make informed decisions. So you start, like we said, even with just a little. You start thinking about your retirement, or you can just think about saving for a vacation, or for home renovations, or for your child's education. For helpful advice, you can access a financial advisor in a branch or through a live chat, all on your terms, all at no additional cost. So yeah, wherever you are, just start. Head into a branch and ask to try My Advisor, or visit rbc.com/myadvisor to find out more. It's only at RBC.